Today is April 7th, 2019, and my name is Deborah Schwartz. I'm sitting here in the Hivory on behalf of the Mill Valley Public Library and the Mill Valley Historical Society with Helen Russell. Helen, thank you so much for joining me on this beautiful sunny day.
Thank you, Deborah. It's great to be here.
It's hard to be here, I think, because it's been so rainy for the last several months, and now it's beautiful outside, and here we are inside.
We will go for a hike right after.
Okay, deal. In introducing you, Well, first of all, let me just say that you are co-founder and CEO of Equator Coffee and Tea.
Correct.
Or Equator Coffees.
Correct. Either one.
And I remember some months ago when we were talking, we're friends.
Yeah.
That you said that you are a 24-year overnight success.
Yes, exactly. Because we started Equator in 1995 in San Rafael in a garage. So we are, made in Marin for the last 24 years. We'll be 25 January 1. So we've only been in retail, having the retail stores for 6 years. So people are always surprised when I tell them that we've been in business for 24 years.
But suddenly it seems when you came aboard into the public arena, there you were, like you, with all the savvy of somebody who was born to it, it seemed from the outside. I'm sure the inside story.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. That's so great. I mean, it was pretty easy because, not easy, I mean, there was a lot of challenges in terms of opening retail, and it was interesting how we launched into retail, from being a wholesale coffee roaster and, getting that call. Gosh, it was 7 years ago now when Starbucks purchased La Boulangerie. And La Boulangerie was one of our largest wholesale customers. We started with Pascal Rigaud on Pine Street and grew with him to 22 stores. And when Howard Schultz asked his team in Seattle, who is our competition for coffee in San Francisco, they came back with it's La Boulangerie, which was our largest wholesale customer.
And so you're just roasting coffee.
We're just roasting coffee. Wholesale coffee for, great chefs and restaurateurs like Chef Thomas Keller of the French Laundry, Chef Tracy Desjardins, Williams-Sonoma, some retail stores, Whole Foods and things like that. But primarily wholesale, for sure. We were doing a lot of wholesale, and we still are. We have over 450 wholesale customers in Northern California, Southern California, and now we're roasting in New York. We've been roasting in New York for the last year and a half. So when we received that call from Pascal Rigaud 6.5 years ago now to say that Starbucks was purchasing La Boulange, it was quite a shock, because there was $1.1 million of revenue that we were supplying them in coffee. And so I remember Brooke McDonald, my co-founder and partner, saying to me, oh my goodness, we're going to have to get into retail. And I said, retail? Oh my God, I can't get up at 4:30 in the morning. I'm 50. And so that was the funny part. So, and right at the same time, one of my sales reps had called on Proof Lab, because Nate, who's one of the founders down there, had called up to Equator and said, I'd like to put some coffee into the station, which they have the Patagonia station. So he came back and he said, gosh, have you ever been down to the surf shop? I said, God, I've been living in Mill Valley on Miller Avenue at Mill Creek Meadows. I've been going by there, but I've never been in because I don't surf. So I went down with him. He said, yeah, it's pretty amazing. There's something special going on down there. So I got in the car. I drive down. I meet, Will and Will Hutchinson, Will and Nate are the co-founders, and I meet Will, and we're walking around, and I'm like, oh my God, I can smell the ocean, my hair is blowing, I hear music lessons in the background, I see people at the nursery, the station is there, he's selling clothes, I go in to see the surfboards. I'm like, oh my God, I've been living here all this time, and I never even knew this was here. And so we're walking around. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, maybe this is the opportunity to have a coffee shop here. So I said to Will, I said, I know you just want to put an AirPod brewer in. I said, but, have you thought about a coffee shop? And he says, yes, Nate and I have been thinking, wouldn't it be a great place, Tam Junction, to have a coffee shop right here at the surf shop? So I said, you know what, Will? I don't surf. And he says, you know what? I don't drink coffee. So I said, you know what? Together we're going to do this. And that's exactly how it came about. We put together, that was an old shack, an old blue shack where he kept the the wetsuits were drying, and there were shoe boxes everywhere. The building was kind of collapsing on itself, and there was just this paved little parking spot out front, and we hired an architect, and we really wanted it to be indigenous to Tam Junction, and we wanted it to be part of the surf shop. And we opened that store. It'll be 6 years in June. I think it was June 14th. And literally, I spent the first 6 months down there, you know, washing the tables down and just talking to the community and to the customers, telling them our story. And it really kind of became this sort of incredible, like, polo lounge, I call it, because there were so many people that live in Mill Valley that, you know, we were coming in for coffee and they were hearing the story about Equator. And from there, it just catapulted us into more wholesale. The head of LinkedIn, the global workplace, was on his way to Muir Woods with his family and had our coffee and said, "God, this is the best cup of coffee I ever had. We'd like you to come in and put your coffee at all the LinkedIn locations." So that little surf shop, after a year,
became
a hub. And what was fun about it, which was amazing about it, and what I loved about the retail, it was just the community. You know, down there, whether you're 3 or 83, you know, you just feel good in that space. And it has a lot to do with the way we've created that space to be part of that community. And after the first year, guess what? It did $1.1 million in revenue, which replaced all of the money that we lost when
Starbucks... Just from a retail store.
Just from that retail store. And that put us on the map in terms of, you know, when we started in 95, there were only probably 30 coffee roasting companies on the West Coast. Now there's over 400. So unless you really have a retail store, it doesn't matter if, you know, you own a farm in Panama or you've been the roaster of the year or you're doing a private blend for the French Laundry. None of that matters unless you really have a retail store to experience the brand. So that was our first step into retail, was Proof Lab.
Well, you and I have known each other for a while, and we've collaborated on various community events.
Yep.
And if there's one thing I think about when I think of you, Helen, it's community.
Yes.
And you are very much a community person. Mm-hmm. You just have a way of bringing people together in so many ways. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. But now that you've whet our appetite for Equator,
yes.
First I want to go back a little bit and even understand, so people that know Equator can get the genesis, really, of
right.
the story.
Sure.
I mean, you're in Mill Valley. Were you born in Mill Valley?
No, I was born in Somerville, Massachusetts in 1960. And ever since I was a little kid, I always wanted to own my own business, which really made no sense because there was nobody in my family that was an entrepreneur. It made zero sense. And I was the youngest of four, and my mom worked for the phone company for 35 years, New England Telephone, and my dad was a postal inspector.
And their names?
Helen and Fred Russell. Yeah. So I was the youngest, and I can always remember telling them, I'm going to move to California and start a business and, you know, be an entrepreneur. My mom would say, well, what is an entrepreneur?
How old are you when you're saying
I'm
this?
Like eight
you're
or
declaring
nine.
This.
I'm like 8 or 9 years old. And
California, I mean, that's
California,
really...
California, I've never even been there, right?
I just decided that
I must have intuitively known, in order for me to really realize whatever dream that was percolating within me, that I needed to go west to realize that dream. And I didn't know what the business would be. I don't think there are many, you know, people say, is coffee your passion? You know, for me, my passion is human connection and kindness and empathy. Those are my passions, and really fell into coffee. And of course, there's so much human connection and kindness and people, because you're selling an agricultural product that people are farming, and these folks aren't making a lot of money. And there's ways that now that we've been in business for 24 years, almost 25, that we have created what we call the chain of well-being, where we can actually, you know, work with the farmers in terms of initiatives, paying them a way fairer price than they can get on the market, doing microcredit loans and food security projects and all these things that are sort of intuitively things that you should do. When you find something that's not quite right, you leave it better than what you found it. So, you know, None of this was strategy. It was just kind of the
when
way
you
it was.
Were a child, did you have an idea that I'm a social person and I want to be in a place where I can be social and do it the way I want to do it? Or what was the...
Well, I've always wanted to do things the way I want to do it. I mean, I don't know where I get that. I'm just, you know, I've been very, you know, I'm very self-determined, willful, persistent. I mean, I was not a great academic at all.
Did you go to school?
I did go to college. I was the first one in my family to go to college. I put myself through Northeastern.
Let's just get a little background from... So you're growing up in a town...
In Medford, Massachusetts, is a great blue-collar community, Italian neighborhood.
To grammar school there?
Went to grammar school in Medford High School and graduated. And then I went to UMass Boston for a couple of years. And then I just decided that, you know what, I want to get my degree. I need to have a college education. I just felt like it was just really, really important.
And your siblings aren't going to school? Are you in the lineup?
I'm the youngest.
The names of your siblings?
Yeah, my sister Christine, my brother Fred, my brother Steven, they all... my sister had a mental illness, so she didn't actually work, but my brother's retired from the phone company and what would be considered BART out here. Mm-hmm. So I was the one that, you know, went to college because it's interesting, you know, growing up, my friend Tricia, who was my best friend, her dad was a police officer and her mom was the crossing agent. But when I would go down there and sit with them and have, you know, like lunch or something, all they ever talked about was going to college, right? And when I was sitting at my home, you know, all my parents talked about was, you know, when you get married and you live next door so you can take care of us. And that was the message that I got. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go back down to, you know, Trisha's house because that's really not what I want to do. I'd love to do it, but I want to do it in a different way. So I got that message really early, but I got it from my best friend's family.
Village.
Yeah, it does. It really, really does.
So you went to school, and what did you graduate? And what degree?
I got a marketing and business degree from Northeastern University. Yep.
So very helpful for what?
Helpful, right? You know, I got tutored in accounting because I got a C in math. So, you know, a lot of times people ask me, you know, what does it take to be an entrepreneur? And I said, you know, you're going to be extremely focused. You have to be totally driven.
Tutors.
Yeah, and be fairly intelligent. I mean, you just need to know what you don't know and hire those people to fill it in.
Right.
And
that's always a good
thing. And it's really being, you know, self-aware is, I think, always saves the day when you're
an entrepreneur. So when did you finally, tell me this, when you have this preternatural vision as a child, yeah. I'm going to do this. And did it stick with you or did it come and go? When did you finally come west?
Well, I'll tell you, I remember my mother got me a job at the phone company and this was the catalyst for me. In 1980, she gets me a job at the phone company.
And this is what? I can just imagine.
I am in the basement of a building in Winchester, Massachusetts, and I'm on the facilities team. So people are calling in, broken furnaces, busted toilets. And Joanne, who was my boss, said to me, you got to get out of here. You have got to go back to school.
Just when you describe it, the look in your eyes, it looked like a trapped animal.
I'm not the type of person that can be below or inside. I got to be out with people. Uh-huh. I feel like I need to make an impact, whatever that is, whether it's putting someone's luggage up.
Run.
So she said, run. And I remember this other woman that was sitting on the other side who was just about to retire. Her name was Ellen. And she has since passed. And she said, you should go to California. What are you going to do? I said, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's ice cream, but I'm going. And they were like, good.
How old are you?
I am 20. I'm 20 years old. So then that's when I decided, it was Joanne who said to me, my boss said, I want you to go back to college. And I quit. And my mother, I swear, she wore black the whole summer because she did all this work to get me in the phone company, which was a secure job that you could be in for 30 years. And you could get that little Bell Labs little bracelet and you were going to be okay. And I was like, no, I got to get out of here. So I did that. So I went to Northeastern and I ended up working. I graduated and I got a job in sales, selling voice and data networks at the Prudential Center. And, you know, one thing about sales is that, you know, what I love about coffee, you can taste it, you can smell it. There's a story, there's people. You look into that cup, you can see people's faces. Voice and data networks, you just point out the window and you can't see fiber optics. You can't taste it, you can't smell it. And it's just, it's not even real. So I was so happy to get that sales training, but I was happy to get out of there as well. And and the catalyst to get out to Mill Valley, California, was that I took a trip to Palm Springs for the Dinosaur in 1989.
The Dinosaur what?
Dinosaur is a golf tournament in Palm Springs.
She is always such a classy lady.
Which is so funny because we didn't play golf.
But why did you go?
Well, apparently, the Dinosaur in Palm Springs, and I didn't know it at the time, was sort of lesbian spring break. I was only 29, so I was like, what do I know?
So have you come out to your family at that point?
Yes, I had.
So they knew all along?
Of course, my mother said, of course, we've known all along, you know. And I said, well,
were they cool with it?
Yeah, you know, my mom was okay with it because, you know, your parents just want you to be happy. Mm-hmm. They really just want you to be happy. And I took a long time to tell them. And if I have one regret in life, I would have told them a lot sooner because I think they would have liked it that way instead of wondering. But I had come out to California 2 years before, and I was on vacation in San Francisco with my partner at the time, and we met Peggy Bennington, who lives here at 409 Throckmorton Avenue, mm-hmm. and she's a lawyer. And she's been in Mill Valley for over 30 years at that same address. And she and I met, and we connected, and we ended up going to the Dinosaur together. And then I met Brooke McDonald, who's my current partner, last 30 years.
But you, as I recall, there was a wedding not too long ago.
Yeah, we got married 2 years ago, yeah. Which is kind of interesting because Brooke's mother was married 4 times, so she said there's no way we're getting married. But I think our accountant and tax attorney talked her into it.
29 years of begging and a good accountant. She's yours forever.
Yeah, she's yours mine forever. So I met Brooke, and that was it.
So you're at the Dinosaur.
I'm at the Dinosaur. I see Brooke across the room. I had seen her in Provincetown 2 years before. I marched over there and said, oh, you're from Boston. And she said, no, I'm not. I said, no, you are. And she's like, no, I really am not from Boston. So I tried to convince her where she was from. And
you are bossy.
Yeah, I am very bossy, yeah. And then, so we ended up, Peggy gave us the car, so we drove up the coast, and she was living out at the Great Highway, and it was my birthday, and she said, I'm going to take you to Marin. We're going to go over the bridge, we're going to go to Tiburon, and we went to Guaymas and celebrated my 29th birthday. And then I went back to Boston, and I asked my boss for a meeting. And I said, look, I've met someone in California. I need to be transferred.
Really? Love at first sight.
It was love at first sight. It was just one of those things where, you know, if I get something in my mind that I, you know, I'm just going to go down that road. And that's what I did. I was just like, oh, my God. So he said, oh, so you've met someone. And he said, so what's his name? And I said, his name is Brooke, which worked perfectly. So he got me transferred out here, so I ended up on Howard Street, and I moved in with Peggy. She had a beautiful in-law apartment. And I remember walking down Throckmorton, past the library, past the park, down to, at that time, was the Roastery, which is where Equator currently is, at Two Miller. And sitting on those bean bags while somebody was roasting coffee, growing up in Boston 30 years ago, where the big treat was to go to church and go to Dunkin' Donuts. And sitting there, I was just marveling at it. So to think that 25 years later, that is now an Equator Coffee location, which is the center of town, which is when we opened up the surf shop. You know, Arnold Spinelli had the space. And the funny part is, when Brooke picked me up at the airport, we went to Spinelli's in San Francisco, moved into 409 Throckmorton that afternoon, drove down the hill, and I walked down the hill, I'm at Two Miller at Equator. And
only you were Roastery then.
It was a Roastery then, yeah. It was a Roastery then.
So and like in an efficient day or two, it's pretty much...
I fell in love with Mill Valley. I thought, I couldn't get over it. I couldn't imagine it. And it was June 22nd, 1989 that I moved out here and lived on 409 Throckmorton. And then Brooke and I purchased a condo on 803 Miller at Mill Creek Meadows, and we lived there for 8 years.
So
right on the bike path.
So you jumped Mill Valley to be with Brooke, although you were living with someone else. But
roommates. Yeah,
it was a done deal. You were going to, and you quickly assimilated and got a place together, and
began our journey. And then we had started a coffee bar called Europa,
And where was Europa?
Europa was at Spear Street in the city and over at 155 Grand Avenue in Oakland.
So how did it come to be coffee?
Well, you know, how did it come to be coffee? What's interesting is that, I was in, Voice and Data Networks, and then I had some stock left over, and we went up to the Northwest, and we just saw the whole specialty coffee thing happening, and we were just, we were flipping small houses, and literally, Brooke and I were sitting at Pioneer Square in downtown Portland. She was having an espresso, I was having a mocha with whipped cream piled high, and she starts to describe the viscosity and the taste and the flavor profiles. And I'm like, oh my God. I said, I'm going to go get more whipped cream. That's interesting. So I come back and I said, Brooke, you know what? You love coffee and I love business. I said, let's start a coffee company. And she said, okay, sure. That's what's great about being 31 and 2, right? So we get back in the car, drove back. We wrote a little business plan on a napkin. We came up with Europa, and then we opened up two locations. So we're able to sort of purchase equipment, understand a P&L, understand the lease. But the pivotal point was nobody would tell Brooke, the roasters that we were using wouldn't tell Brooke anything about the product. I mean, Brooke wanted to know the elevation of where the coffee was being grown, how much the farmers were being paid, were those children in school, were there scarce times when they didn't have food.
She wanted the social consequences.
She wanted to know all
of
that. And this was over 25 years ago now.
Was she a guiding light in that regard for you?
Totally. She is the product. She is the North Star. I mean, Brooke traveled all around the world as a child. She has an amazing palate for wine, for chocolate, and she hung out in the Castro, and who would be sitting next to her, would be Harvey Milk. She hung out at Cafe Trieste. So she had sort of that cafe lifestyle and that curiosity. So after, we had the two locations, and I said, Brooke, you know what? If you really want to roast coffee, let's do it. And this other half of the diamond ring that's on my hand, which was her mom, she sold, and she got a little tabletop Petrocini roaster from Italy, and then she started buying green coffee from Dallas Brothers, which was a 100-year-old company in New York, and then she started roasting coffee on this little 2.5 tabletop roaster, and then she started pulling it on an espresso machine. She named the company Equator because coffee and tea is grown along the equator. She chose the Bengal Tiger, which you see me sticking that on every child I can find.
And I'm wearing
a
sweatshirt
with Equator sweatshirt. Yes. And the Bengal Tiger has become sort of symbolic of who we are. And we chose that for its rarity, grace, and power because we're women-owned. And again, there were only 5 women roasting coffee in the U.S.
And at that point, you said there was 400 at one point.
There were only 35 roasters on the West Coast. And now there's over 400.
Yes, and so at that time, and there's very few women.
Very few women. It was Brooke. It was Lindsay Bolger. I forget her first name. Katzoff from Thanksgiving Coffee. Mm-hmm. There weren't very many. Mm-hmm. So little did we know we were trailblazers at the time. But she started roasting coffee. We put together the logo, the trademark, Equator. Beautiful packaging. Because we had had those two coffee bars, I understood how to sell equipment and how to lay out a coffee bar. And then I just started cold calling anybody that was opening up a new restaurant or anything, coffee bar. And we would go out, and our unique selling proposition was that we would open with them the first week. Then I started writing articles.
What do you mean open with them?
I would show up at 4:30 in the morning, work with them till the end of the day for 5 days. Right, when they opened
up a new
coffee shop.
Yes, so you were there, you were hand-holding.
Yep, Cafe Sapori on Lombard.
I guess you would say you were the training wheels.
I was the training wheels, yeah, absolutely, because we had hired a consultant, paid them X amount of dollars to help us, because you're nervous, right? You're at the register, you're steaming milk, you got a line, and so we were the calming force because we had done it before. So, I really understood the P&L and all the things that you need. And then,
P&L, what is an acronym?
Profit and loss, okay. Right? Mm-hmm. Of sort of how to be a consultant. And then I started writing articles for the trade magazines, how to buy espresso equipment, brewing equipment. And those days,
making
we sold
for
everything. Absolutely, in the industry. I would sell anything. Espresso equipment, brewing equipment, refrigeration, roasters, water filtration systems, anything to keep that business running. And that's what we did. And then
and you sold under the what biz, a business
under
name?
Equator. Yeah.
Just, oh, yeah. So you were not only roasting your coffee, but you were providing all these additional services.
Yes. So if you were opening up a coffee bar right now, I'd sell you espresso equipment, brewing equipment. I'd look at your architectural
You're
plans.
All in
I'd
one
lay it
stop.
Out. One stop shopping. Yeah. Whether it be coffee, tea, filters, chocolate. Anything that you would possibly need to open up that coffee bar and be successful, because we were committed to your success, because the more successful you are, the more coffee we're going to roast for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it just started that way. And having those 2 years with Europa as our first start, who would have known? In any successful business, you need three things. You have to have the people, and that's me, the salesperson. You've got to have the product. Brooke is chief product officer. She traveled to the farmer's gate. She got dirt on her boots. She met with those farmers in Guatemala. She understood that product. She brought it back.
And did she make a determination to work with certain groups or people based on their social ethics? Or
yes, it had to be, you know, quality. It had to be quality number one. And quality always leads to sustainability, mm-hmm. right? Specialty coffee is, we only buy the top 2% of specialty coffee. So, and we buy coffee from Central South America, East Africa, Indonesia. I'm going to be traveling to Rwanda in June, a place that I was 12 years ago when I took a trip and brought back coffee from Rwanda. And now it's part of our menu that we have, because there's 47,000 women that have, you know, rebuilt the country post-conflict through coffee. So we had a very, you know, tiny. It was Howard Schultz at Starbucks who first went over there and had the Black Apron Project because, you know, it helped keep the tensions down by selling coffee, exporting coffee from Rwanda. So Brooke has always been extremely socially minded, right?
But she's not that social, really, is she? I mean,
she's very much an artist, uh-huh. right? She's very much an introvert. Very much an artist. I remember when we were the first coffee roasting company in Northern California to sign on with Fairtrade USA. We were the first. Why were we the first? Because it absolutely appealed to Brooke's heart and mind, and to the company's, of course, mine. And I remember Brooke was out roasting, and I get a call from Jerry Baldwin, who was the chairman at the time of Pete's. And he said, Helen, can you have Brooke give me a call back? I've got people picketing outside here on 4th Street in Berkeley. They want fair trade coffee. Now, Pete's had always purchased great coffee and always paid a fair price, well above, you know, fair trade. But because it didn't have that seal. So here you have Jerry Baldwin, who's a legend. You know, that would be like Jerry Garcia calling you and saying, what kind of pick do you use on your guitar? You know, it would be that crazy, right? And so she called him back and she said, this is women-owned cooperative that were buying the fair trade for Peru. So we became friends with Jerry. Of course, Pete's was giant. And that's when that was like my first real cup of coffee, when we would go over to Pete's Coffee here in Mill Valley and then sit on the depot and drink that amazing brew. And it was so dark, and they would stir it and they get that amazing extraction. It was like the best cup of coffee I've ever had. And I just loved it. And that's what Brooke and I would do in the afternoons. We'd come down to downtown Mill Valley, we'd go to Pete's, and we'd sit on the plaza and just imagine, not even knowing that behind us would be an equator someday. It's just hard to believe. And it's like, when I came to Mill Valley, I was like, oh my God, I didn't want to leave it. I loved it. And when we had, you know, we lived on at Mill Creek for 8 years. And then as we were growing the company, we needed to sell the condo. Then we rented in Larkspur for a year, right behind where our store is now in Larkspur. And then we moved to Yountville and we bought a cottage. And then we put our coffee in one of the local cafes there. And then Chef Thomas Keller comes in from the French Laundry and tries our coffee. And then he calls. So this journey of Mill Valley for 8 years, Larkspur for a year. And then we went up to Yountville for 3 years. And then we moved back and we were in Novato for 15 years on Hamilton, right? And we were growing the business, right? And then all of a sudden, I was coming down here every weekend for Proof Lab. And the goal was always to get back into Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Always to live in Mill Valley. And then
the sirens of Mill Valley were calling to you.
You know, and I was at Proof Lab, and, you know, and we're you know, that money was building the business, and we're putting money away, putting money away, putting money away. And of course, you know, we found a little house up here in 60 Hillside, you know, half the size, double the price from where we're living. But it was so important. I said to Brooke, and she says, you love Mill Valley. I was going to stay at an Airbnb here. Everybody who came up to me said, do you live here in Mill Valley? Like all the residents, right? And then I would tell my story of how I lived here and this and that. And I went home and I said, Brooke, we're moving. I have to be in my town. We can't own a business here unless we're part of this community. So let's just do it sooner rather than later. I know we'd like something a little bit bigger, but I've got to get back in. And then we moved here and, of course, walked down to town.
Because Hillside, the house that you lived in, is just right above the Catholic Church there.
Yep, and we would come down. I'd come down every day and go to both stores.
I mean, really, you could go to the back of the church. We have walked up.
Yeah, we walked up together. And it's just like, you know, and that was a beautiful little spot because you could lay there and you could hear the weddings are happening at the Art Center.
Practically smell the coffee.
You could smell the coffee. You could hear the laughter and the weekends. And I just thought, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I can believe it because this is what I imagined, being a part of this town.
Are there people in this town in particular? Sometimes, you know, you come, I mean, there's a lot about Mill Valley.
Yep.
There's the natural world, and then there's the people and what holds us, many things. But sometimes there are pivotal people that just make a place feel like home. Do you have, are there people in your mind that just seem like those people to you? Or characters that have caught your attention and wanted you to know more.
Oh, well, Ken Brooks, I grabbed onto him early on because I remembered him from 1989 when he moved here, when he owned that store here.
The roastery.
Ken Brooks, remember Ken? He's on the chamber. He's now over at the Mill Valley Depot now in the bookstore. Ken?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Him. Really?
So he had a retail store, and I remembered him from when he was in that store.
Right.
Uh-huh. And so when we opened Miller, he was one of the people who stopped by, and he's like nodding, looking at me suspiciously, right? And sometimes it's like, who's this interloper? And so we became very good friends, and he was super helpful in helping us sort of navigate things. And I think when Arnold Spinelli, left, he had, I think it was called La Copa at the time, or maybe changed the name since then. But it was a very, very big deal because, you know, it had been gone through several iterations. It was the Roastery, then it was Bonavita, then it was La Copa. And now Equator's coming in. So a lot of the residents were very concerned about what was going to happen to the employees there, how would it change, and all those things. And I totally got it, you know, because, you know, look, I love this town. I would want to know who's coming in as well. And I answered, I thought, everybody's question, and we wanted to keep everybody was there. And I said to Brooke, look, you know what? This is going to take a while. Let's put a cart out front and really build community before we even open. Mm-hmm. So we put the espresso cart out.
Because it took a while to open.
There's a lot of unfortunate, it's not unfortunate. It's kind of the way it is now, right? It's just the way it is.
Working with
the planning department, and I get it. You know, and I have a lot of, you know, you're over there, people are bringing in their plans for their nanny's house, another garage for the Tesla, we got to put the dog over here, and these folks who are working there can't even live here, they can't even afford to live here, and they're getting inundated with plans, and now they've got one more, so, you know, it's a lot. I think they have a lot on their plate at the planning department. They want to do the right thing. They want to be helpful, but it's the wheels move slowly, and we got caught up. We got a lot of sand in our wheels. Even though we did everything right, there was a lot of transition at the building department.
Mm-hmm.
So if we hadn't put that cart out there, I think we would have lost everything. You know, that really helped us get through. And the residents were so grateful for us being out there, and it became the hub. It became the front step, the stoop of Mill Valley. And everybody was so kind and gracious, and they were cheering us on. And should we go over to the planning department with you? I said, no, we'll move through it. We'll get there. And fortunately for us, you know, we had that wholesale business that allowed us to get through it all.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, things have changed over there, and it seems like it's way more organized and functional, and things are better, which is great. But at that time, they were shorthanded, and it was tough on them. But, you know, I never lost the empathy of knowing that, even though it was costing us hundreds of thousands of dollars, really. I mean, that thing should have never been that expensive.
But you did a lot with the store here in the plaza.
We totally changed it.
The history as well that you built in subtle ways.
Yes, that history there. I mean, I get goosebumps when I think about it. When I think about the train coming down Miller Avenue and exiting to the depot, when I think about all the redwood that we really went out and sort of scavenged for and playing downstairs, Dan Defoe was my contractor, and he found me all this redwood, and he set up a place downstairs, and all that redwood that you see is repurposed in there.
And the railroad ties.
The railroad ties are my favorite, because I remember Dan was calling me, and he was up on 37. They were harvesting. They were taking up the railways, the railway ties. And they were like, one of them is like 1910 Colorado. And he said, let's build that front out front. So we created the railway ties.
That's the counter outside.
The counter outside.
So if you look, and it's not always obvious to those who may just be looking from the top. There's a small plaque.
Yeah, I put two small plaques there as an ode to Mill Valley, because this place is so special that I wanted people to remember that it wasn't long ago when that train pulled in. It wasn't long ago that this was this rural community, that the only access was the train. Now we have a lot of tech families coming up that are moving over the bridge because it's close to San Francisco and you can raise a family here. I remember one of our customers down at Proof Lab, his name is Dave Morin. Dave's awesome.
Right.
Dave and Britt Morin, and he was at the surf table, and a little bit of his mocha fell onto his boot, and I went down there and I cleaned it off, and he said, "Oh, you must be the owner. Nobody does this." He said, "Let me tell you a funny story." So he started to tell me that Britt, his wife, had said to him, "Dave, we're gonna have a baby, and we're gonna move over the bridge, and we're gonna move to Mill Valley." And he said, "I'm not moving to Mill Valley. There's no good coffee in Mill Valley." And she said, "No, you gotta try Proof Lab Surf Shop. We're gonna go." So she brings me here. I have a cup of coffee, and then I drive up the hill and I buy the house.
Yeah.
I said, "That's awesome."
And then not only did you do that, but after you met them, I recall, you called me and said, "We've got some new people in town."
Did I? I called
yes,
you about Dave and Britt.
Come say hi, introduce them around.
Yeah, well,
that's
they're
you
so,
in community.
Yeah, they're so special. And then, little did I know, I found out that Dave's family, when they came through Ellis Island, their last name was Katz, K-A-T-Z. And so when it must have been his grandfather, great-grandfather, said to the gentleman that was behind the desk, he said, what in English is a name for cats? And so the gentleman said feline. And so he heard it as Filene. So they were the founders of Filene Basement in Boston, which is like, that was our hangout after church. We could go to Filene's. I said, "You're kidding. That was your family?" He says, "No." So all these wonderful little stories that makes this community so special. The local residents, the people that have been here a very, very long time, the people who are fortunate enough to come here. It's expensive, right? It's really expensive because of the proximity, but we're living in paradise here. I mean,
how about whose idea was it to put in the biker stools?
That was me.
Stools.
I just, you know, every
because
one of our
got
stores.
A history of mountain biking here on Mount Town.
Absolutely. And I wanted to make little, you know, at the time, if I had the COO I have now, he never would have let me. But I was like, oh my God, I had this gentleman over in Berkeley make me these seats because I wanted it to feel like a saddle, maybe a little bit more comfortable. So the
like a bike saddle.
Like a bike saddle.
So there's even the space there to protect your prostate.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, all these little idiosyncratic things, you know, from the train to the redwood to the railway ties, and then actually getting that little area out front that we could slide the bikes in. And I wanted to have waffles because I loved waffles, and I wanted the community to have a place that they could call their own. Because people always say, you know, to me, or, you know, they say, "Can we do this here?" And I say, "I built it for you. You can do whatever you want here." Yes. I always say yes. Yes. "Can we have an event here?" Yes. "Can we do this?" Yes. "Do whatever you want here. This is your space."
Mm-hmm.
This is why we built it.
But And then you did a real favor for the Mill Valley Historical Society.
Did I?
With our orphan map, Helen.
Oh, God, that map is a treasure.
When was it that I called you? Must have been 3 years ago, maybe?
Yep.
We've got the beautiful hiking map that had been on the store over by Old Mill Park.
Yep.
That when they took down the old building,
yep.
they dismantled the map and put it in someone's garage. And for years and years and years, the Historical Society's been trying to find a place to put that map up, renovate it,
right.
and continue to capture, you know, the include the long history of hiking in this town. Was just one disappointment after another about where can we place this map. But then when I called you, and you're like, I want the map.
Yeah, I want that map.
Can we put it?
Give me the map.
There was no real space except on the building.
Yep. At 34 Miller on the side.
But at the time, we didn't have the cooperation of
the current
Baker.
Yeah, and I called him and asked, and I said, why wouldn't you want this map? Why wouldn't you want people standing there reading the history, enjoying the story right around from your front door where you can sell them ice cream next? It's like ice cream, history, families.
Outdoors, fun.
And he's like, no, I don't want the map. And I said, well, he's long gone now.
And so one day I get a call from you.
I want the map.
I've got the building.
Yeah. We took over
the
lease.
I took over the lease. Where's that map?
Right? And we got it up.
And then we proceeded. And now we have a beautiful placement for the map, which was...
You know what? It's just about saying yes. There's no reason to overthink these things. You know, it's just like, this is our history. This is our town. People come here to walk. And you know, you run the history program of running, you know, through the town of looking at the clock at the depot.
Oh, the history walks.
The history walks.
Yes.
I mean, every corner of this town has been the stories that have graced it. It's just, it's amazing.
Often I think of history as knowing history as the capillaries that start to root you to the earth below you. And once the more history you know and the more you connect to the actual story of the land around you, the more rooted you are in the place you are. And the more rooted you are, the more you care.
Yeah.
And you do, in your ethic with your business, where you want to make sure that the people you work with are treated fairly and that they're safe and they're...
Yep.
Their lives are good. You also, it seems to me, in my experience with you in the collaborations, just a couple, that's just me. I can't even imagine how many more collaborations you've been in with other people in giving to the community and making your space available and providing coffee. And not just when there's something that happens downtown, like the roof falls or there's a flood and you leave the coffee out for the firemen or the policemen.
Yep.
Help yourself.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service, but just in the way that you give in other ways. Can you describe a little bit about that and not just about the business, but in your ethic about supporting community?
Yeah, I think it just comes from, I think it's really important as a business owner. And I think, you know, growing up and seeing my parents work really, really hard and having, you know, incredible health insurance, which in the end was so important for them, and building a business that, you know, we have 133 employees and they are our community internally and they all have health insurance. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have such great people working for us, because none of the folks that you see at Miller that work for Equator or down at the surf shop can afford to live in town, but they will come and work for us because we're paying them well above, you know, minimum wage. We're giving them an opportunity to learn something and an education in coffee. They can not only go from being a barista, they can be an assistant manager, a manager, then come over to the wholesale. They can be an account manager. They can be a trainer. They can come into our roasting plant and they can, you know, close boxes, taste coffee, buy green coffee. There's so many opportunities in specialty coffee to grow. And all the young people that you see behind our bars, they're all very educated. And it's really been important for us that we provide a safe place for them to work, that they feel protected, that they feel nurtured, that they want to come to work. And I think that, you know, having that protective feeling for your own community in terms of the company that you've built, it's, I feel that same way for the people that come into the stores. You know, I remember this woman came to town and she had just got into the Redwoods, and I saw her walk by and she looked in and she was very hesitant and she had a, you know, a cane. And then I went over and I walked her in and I said, come in. And she said, oh, I was just coming by. And I said, well, where do you live? And she said, oh, I just moved here. And I said, where do you live? The Redwoods. I said, look, I want you to sit down. I'm going to give you a cup of tea and I'm going to give you a little piece of lemon cake. And I just want you to just see Mill Valley from this corner, from inside. And she said, really? I said, yes. I said, I'll sit with you for a minute. But I want you to see it from here so you can see the people walking by, you can hear the noises and see what's going on, because I'm sure it's a lot when you just got here, right? And so it's having that empathy and that understanding that we all want to feel as if we matter, that we're valued, and being kind. It's just so simple. It's just about being observant and about being curious, you know, and we try to hire for kindness and teach them how to make coffee, not the other way around. For me, the most important attribute is empathy, because if you have empathy, there's so many things that you can do. You can help people. When I get on an airplane and I sit down, I look around and see what elderly person needs me to put their bag up. I just don't open my book, because these folks at the airlines now, they're not helping people anymore like they used to, because they're not getting paid, they're not feeling valued. But I'm not going to stop myself from not helping them, because they want to. So we try to instill that in our team. So that's where the community comes from, right? And I always describe it as, you know, whether you're 3 or 83, it's like a Katy Perry concert, you're going to feel good inside our store.
And what people can't see right now is, as you're describing this, you're running a circle on the
sheepskin. Closing them with love.
Yeah, you've right? got a circle, and then you're looking inside that, and that's how you're holding people.
And that's how I want to hold people. I want people to feel safe. I want them to feel valued. There was a woman down at Proof Lab. I'll never forget this, an older woman. And she's sitting there, and she's smiling. And there's a gentleman next to her with a tank top on, his hair's crazy wild, blowing, and he's smiling at her. And so she's a substitute teacher. She's probably 76 years old. She said, Helen, I love it here. I just love it. I just feel so great. Like she felt like she belonged there. And she's looking up at that surfboard. She's saying, yeah, I could have done that. You know? But it's that feeling of like, I can do this. I can be here. That feeling of belonging. Mm-hmm. So that's all I think about 24/7 with our two stores here, because this is an extension of Brooke and I, our living room from Homestead. It's like when I wake up in the morning, I look at the cameras and I'm like, oh, there's Katie Coon, or there's you up here.
Do you know everybody's name?
I pretty much do, right? I want to know everybody's name. There's Donna. There's Tom.
I know. I just was at Equator with you, and
yeah,
it is really, I don't know how you ever even get through that place.
I don't want to. I want to stay there. I just want to be with them.
Everyone's dog. Everyone's child.
I want to clean everybody's
grandchild,
table. Like that little baby. Like that little baby. I mean, she was in her mother's stomach, and here she is, and I just hear she's moving to Australia. I'm like, I'm going to miss you, but she'll be back, right? So it's just sort of... It's sort of this life thing that goes on, right? And there's something about Mill Valley that if you just look around, you can see so many things. Whose parents are visiting from the East Coast that have got the baby out? Who's thinking about buying a home here? You know, who's like visiting and dreaming of living here one day? You see them all. They all just sit there and they look around. I remember my dad came out here the first time. When I moved out here, it was probably early 90s, and we're sitting on that little round bench there across from Pete's. It's right there across from the bank. We're sitting there, and I gave him a cup of Pete's coffee before we had the coffee. And he says to me, does anybody work in this town? I said, they're all authors, and, you know, they do big things. And he's like, wow, everybody's out. So, and it was just, he said, it's like a movie set. And I said, it is like a movie set. You know,
and this is my movie, and I've been conducting it quite
and I'm
well.
In this movie, and I feel so comfortable here. I feel like, you know, I feel like this is my home.
How many on a given afternoon, because I always say about Helen Russell, best hugger in town.
Yeah.
How many hugs in a day?
I love hugging. I think it's just, I'm not running for mayor, that's for sure. So I'd be in trouble, but that couldn't stop me. oh, you know, I 15, 20 hugs. I mean, I'm just like to hug. I mean, it's that feeling when you can connect with someone, right? And just hold on to them and sort of that spark that goes between you, that I see you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for staying in the line, you know, and it's that appreciation that I have, because there's a lot of choices for coffee, right? And there's a lot of great coffee in the Bay Area. And the more coffee that we can sell, the greater impact that we can have. And all I think about is selling coffee, whether it's at the retail stores or on the wholesale or on the website. That's why we started roasting in New York. Brooke's from Manhattan. I'm from Boston. Our executive VP, she's from the Bronx. She was our number one employee. We're roasting out in New York now. Why? Because we want to keep growing this company and layer it with the next generation. And we have a very multi-generational company now. And we really want to be that Patagonia of coffee, where we are, the founders are still here. But those that are coming and rolling through the company, we want the company to be infinite. We don't want it to be finite. I don't want Equator to go away. I want to be going through some little spot in New Hampshire 10 years from now and seeing an Equator bag on a shelf. You know, I want the company to continue, because the bones of the company are such that you can come into this company, you can learn a lot, you can do well. Whether you're there for, I tell my team, I don't care if you're here for 2 weeks, 2 months, or 20 years, we're going to give you everything that you have, so you know what that bar is when you go to the next. That bar is high. And if they're not treating you this way, or thinking about you this way, or valuing you this way, don't do it. You know. And a lot of them are young and they don't get it yet. Then they go to the next location, or whatever they're going. Because the millennials are like that, right? They're not sticky. Mm-hmm. Right? They're not sticky. And you don't want them to be sticky, because they're young. You know, we want them to move on, and we want them to go and learn other things. And that's how you get empathy, if you're curious and you work in many environments.
This sense of belonging, and I know you have to get going, so we'll...
No.
This sense of belonging, do you think it was always with you, or is it life experiences, I mean, that has forged that in you, that sense?
I mean, I think it's making, you know... Making people feel loved and valued. I mean, I was fortunate growing up. I always felt love. They loved us. They held us. They walked us around. You know, my parents were children too at one point in time, you know. And their parents, you know, were kids too. So, you know, I just, the love that they gave to me, and that feeling of security, and it wasn't that you can do anything, because they didn't give me that, but they gave me love. No matter what I would do, I would be loved. And that feeling, I just want that to perpetuate. And I think about it all the time, because when you own your own business, and now you have a lot of employees that are representing you as the founders, it's the hardest thing in the world. So you'll see me go in there. And not only is it me, but I want them to see me put a sticker on a kid. Or like a little kid yesterday, he tripped and it hit his little head on the door down a proof lab, and he was screaming, crying. So I said, let me get you a donut. You want a donut? Wet the sprinkler? Immediately, stop crying. The whole world was right, because he was going to get a donut. His mother looked at me like, oh, my God, thank you. So I got him a little donut, and his brother was there, and I cut it in half, and the tears go down his face. And I said, I bet a little orange juice is going to help now. And he said, orange juice, yeah, I can't believe it. So it's like, it's just about interceding and just doing anything that you can to sort of make
you're like the town mother.
Oh, you know
what? Do you ever feel that way?
I just want people to be happy. Right? There's so much going on.
That's absolutely true.
There's so much going
on. It's daunting.
It's daunting, you know? And I just want the people that come into my orbit to be sent out in a different way.
If, in life lessons, as we get ready to close this.
Sure.
Life lessons. Have you had mentors besides Beautiful Brooke?
Beautiful Brooke is an amazing mentor. You know, I have my mentors, you know, if you look at my reading table, it's so interesting. There's the spiritual books are on one side and the business books are on the other side. And I really think, you know, I'm more focused towards or centered towards spiritual side of me, but the business side I had to learn. So I read Inc. magazine for 20 years. I read Fast Company for 20 years. So I have these two sides to me, and really understanding what my purpose is and what's next for me as I enter my 60th year and transition at some point out of the CEO role, which the CEO role is the retail, the wholesale, the direct-to-consumer, the really sort of pushing the company to grow Northern California, Southern California. I will be the chairwoman of this company, and I will not leave this company, and I will be a majority person in this company in terms of ownership, but coming in and doing more of the communal aspects of who the company is and building that community and the contemporary aspects of it, the happier camper to make people happy. All the pillars that we want to put out. So there's been a lot of lessons. I haven't, you know, my mentor, I read everything that Dr. Wayne Dyer ever wrote. So if I were to have one mentor, it would be Dr. Wayne Dyer. I read everything he ever wrote. And I remember being 16 years old, and I put an Izod shirt on the back of my closet door in Medford, Massachusetts. And I said, I'm going to leave that Izod shirt up there because I thought it was a status symbol, the little alligator.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to put that on until I feel as if I'm worthy of that shirt. And I thought, well, how do I get worthy of that shirt? And I was thinking financially I needed to be in a certain area. And I always wanted to be economically viable from a financial standpoint. Not because I could buy more things, but because I could have more options. So if something didn't go well for my brother, I could help.
Mm-hmm.
If something didn't go well over here with my sister, I could help. So just good role models in terms of, you know, but you have to find people. You have to know where your holes are, and you have to go out and bring people to help you, you know, fill them in. And Brooke was great for me because she had a very high expectation. And no one had ever had a high expectation for me. And so I think I purposefully went towards her because she had that high expectation. So it wasn't that, you know, just because I was funny and a good person. It was like, look, you can do whatever you want to do. You know, you just have to go for it. And having someone in the house that supports you like that, and then when you're in business together, and initially it's never easy, right? My mother used to say when money goes out the window, love goes right after it. And there were times when, you know, when we sold Mill Creek Meadows and, you know, bought the roaster and got the lease, we were down to zero, you know, and it's like, it's go time, you know, and that tells you a lot about who you are as a person. It tells you a lot about your relationship. It tells you a lot about who you will become. But we stuck through it. We went to our corners several times. But, you know, now when I go home to Homestead or see her in a meeting, it's like, oh my God, I'm so glad we spent 30 years this way, or, you know, 25 years in business, because we work so hard. But to be able to be with your partner,
who understands, truly understands.
Who understands and has been there since the get-go. Yeah, and she'll come to the stores with me, but after the sixth person comes up to me, she's like, I'll see you at the house.
Yeah, I didn't really mean anything.
I'll see you later. Once it goes over four, she's done. But she comes down Brooke comes down. Like, she goes around to all the stores and she tastes all the coffee. She goes to the roastery, meet with her team. And then Barbara, I don't know if you know Barbara. I don't know Barbara's last name, but she's one of our locals here. She lives up in Blythedale Canyon. Uh-huh. You've seen her with the little hat.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes to Miller. She comes to the store every afternoon. I'm going to get her a little plaque that says, this is my seat. And she gets there about 3:30. Then Brooke comes down and has coffee with her, and they talk. They talk about what was in the New Yorker, what's going on in the news and politics. And that's that one person. But once it gets to 3 and 4, Brooke's like, okay, she's out. So,
you know, anyway. Speaking of that private public space,
yep.
I was at the LinkedIn building,
yes,
in San Francisco, and there is a whole map of POPOS, which is an acronym for the privately owned public open space. Mm-hmm. All these pods of beautiful little spaces, which you think, well, they are private, but they really aren't.
That's a public space.
All.
Yeah.
They're a public space. And you and
you're in there.
You're in there. You're also, when I was at Berkeley, I saw that you had come into the open space
UC
there
Berkeley,
in Berkeley.
Yeah.
You're all over the place.
It feels, you know, it's funny. It feels like that, I'm sure. Because sometimes, you know, when you start looking for something, you know,
you keep finding
it. You keep seeing it, right? So what's great about the residents and people in Mill Valley, the customers, they'll send me photos from the airport at Boston. You're in the Boston Logan Airport. And they'll send me a photo and they'll send me a text. Are there a Terminal 2? Or they find it down in LA, which is so great because they feel like they've discovered something, you know.
Plus, it's a little bit of home.
It's a little bit of home. And God, you know, my mouth hurts from smiling, but I just want to say how grateful I am and how grateful Brooke is that we have found our way to Mill Valley, back to Mill Valley. I'll go out in Mill Valley. I will leave this life from Mill Valley, and then there'll be another, you know, the tide will come in and the tide will go out, and there'll be more residents that will enjoy the trails that you take everybody on.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is one of the most spectacular, energetic places that I've ever been in. You know, I think it's beyond special. There's something going on here with the nature, and I'm always told to get out in nature more, which is part of what I want to do, because I'm always trying to, like, if I just talk to one more person, if I just make one more call, if I just go out on one more sales call, if I just get on one more plane, I can make an impact. When I really just want to do what you saw me do today, which is just be with the people who are our customers, who entrust us with their mood, their feeling that day.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to add to this interview?
I don't think so. There's something super exciting that's happening down at the Mill Valley Community Center. We are going to be working with, it's called ICS, Integrated Community Services. So back in the day, they built out a little coffee bar there in the Mill Valley Community Center in the front. I remember Piazza mm-hmm. D'Angelo, I think it was 2005, and it didn't work. But we partnered up with ICS, and Jim Welty got a hold of me from the chamber, and Paula got a hold of me. And Paula Reynolds, and they introduced me to this woman who, you know, I fell in love with. And she said, will you help us put a coffee bar in here? Will you? And I said, sure, you know, let me think about it and let me see how you want to do it. And then she came back and then we met with her. And then she said, I said, look, I'll give you the architectural plans for Larkspur. This is the equipment. This is that. And then I started really understanding what ICS was, where they're young adults who have disabilities that they employ. And so then I went down there and I met with the folks at the Mill Valley Community Center. And then I brought my team down there. And we're sitting in the conference room and we're talking about this. And this young man, Connor, went by who works there, who's part of that. And I thought, and she said, that's Connor. And I met Connor and he was cleaning something and doing something. She says, that's one of our, you know, students or success stories. And I said, so this is going to be for disabled people to work here. And I said, I'm all in. So we're partnering with them. We're giving them all our expertise. We're giving them all the equipment that they need. We're going to open with them that first day. We're going to help them bring people through that can serve our residents when they're down there and the kids are playing soccer or the elderly are going through. We're doing all of that, which is something that...
That's new.
That's exciting. That's exciting. If we can... To walk... You know, my sister had a disability, so... You know, to put young people, to employ them down there. So ICS is an amazing group. And
it'd be really nice to be able to, because a lot of people are in that part of town.
I know.
There's so much action over there. There's almost never parking, and they've got a lot of parking.
They've got a lot going on. I mean, there's so many events going on in the back, and then, you know,
it'd
Memorial Day.
What a wonderful idea. But so, on more than just the idea of having a coffee.
So we'll have coffee there, and... we'll have some baked goods there. Nika's going to sell some Urban Remedy product there. And we're just going to help them with the equipment, get it all set up, give them all our training materials. Our team is doing a really good job. It'll be their cafe, but it'll be powered by Equator and anything we can do to help them, you know, do well there.
So listening to your story now, I've sort of surmised that you're really not much of a competitor. You're a collaborator.
Oh, I'm
you
a total
work
collaborator.
With Urban Remedy. I've seen you so many times when you see anybody out there that you, another person might be threatened by, you're like, hey, let's partner up.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think collaborations are the way to go. I mean, they especially are now. Wouldn't it be great to walk into a place and be able to go to Equator, go to Urban Remedy, and then get an ice cream? It's like it's all there together. And that's kind of where retail's going, right? Because it's so expensive. So, collaborate. But that's my nature. Let's collaborate. So we hang out with Nika Pasquale of Urban Remedy. And, when we got this space down here.
Mm-hmm. And you're pointing to the...
Yeah, 34 Miller. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. For 34 Miller. So we have the commissary in the back where we do a lot of baking and mm-hmm. we do our quiche. And then Paul Coletta, who's their CEO, and Nika, who I adore, who's their founder. Paul's on our board.
Of Urban Remedy.
Of Urban Remedy. And I said, look, we've got the space in the front. The ice cream folks are going out. Do you want to come down? So Paul was like, yes. Nika was like, yeah, we want to be down in the center of town. They're up on Blythedale.
Mm-hmm.
So they came down. And so that was great. Then when the Larkspur space came up, I told Paul about it, and he went into the Larkspur space. So yeah, that's kind of what we do. And then when we did the Oakland space, we each dropped two containers in Oakland across from the Whole Foods that were together there. So it's this collaboration that we have because we believe in their product, they believe in ours. So yeah, I love collaborations. I think they're really, really important if you can have some expertise to help those folks. But ICS with, disabled youth and young adults, to be able to give them a skill so they can have a dignified life, that's the jam. That's what it's all about,
mm-hmm.
right? That's what else is there?
That's pretty exciting.
That's pretty cool. So there'll be a big party down there.
I'll be there.
Yeah, you'll be there. Yeah, we'll do a big opening party. Yeah, that's, to me, it's like, yeah, no. They were like, I know you, we'll do a good job with your brand. I'm like, no, I know you. I said, yeah, don't worry.
So we've had this time together.
Yes.
There's been fortuitiveness. There's been love. There's been true love. There's been good vibes. There's lots of hugs.
Lots of
collaboration.
Hugs. Yep.
And appreciation.
Yeah.
So far, sounds like you're living a pretty good life, Helen.
Yeah, respect, appreciate, and value everyone is, I think, one of our guiding lights. And we need more of that. And look at us. We're surrounded by the Hivory, the Depot, all the great restaurateurs that we have in town. I mean, we have everything here. We really, really do.
And let's keep the kindness.
Let's keep kindness. It's always better to be kind than right.
I think that's a good closer.
Okay.
Thank you on behalf of the Mill Valley Historical Society and the Mill Valley Public Library. Helen Russell, thank you.
Thank you, Deborah.